familiar with the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, but there's a long, interesting history behind how we came to own two watershed properties in the Bay Area, but I won't get into that. But there's two major properties, one in the East Bay, in the East Bay, which is hotter and drier, and we hope much less susceptible to sudden earth death impacts, although just yesterday, Mateo Garbalot has told me that the Bay samples we sent in came back positive for Phytophthora ramorum, but which is a bummer. But anyway, we're not going to talk about that today. I'm going to focus in on the Peninsula watershed. So here's the Pacific Ocean for people out of town in San Francisco. We're up to the north of the map in Marin, and it's sort of important that also to the south is Santa Cruz, and this is the Bay. It's not blue, but that's the Bay. So focusing in on the Peninsula, we have large reservoirs, and they run along the San Andreas Fault. The hydraulic boundaries of the watershed are very north to south, which is how we came to own this long, skinny piece of property. It's about 15 miles and 23,000 acres. And the ecology is very much like we see here. There's a strong association between the coastline book and the Bay, California Bay, and that's shown in the dark green. And then there's a strong association also, just like here in Marin, between redwood and tan oak, and that's mostly down in the southwest corner here. And altogether, it's about a third of our total land cover, so it's a pretty significant amount of land that's susceptible to sudden earth death. And it's not only susceptible, it's very symptomatic. Dave Rizzo's lab isolated Phytophthora ramorum here in 2001, so it's been going on for a while here. So the question that we have to wrestle with is, after you have the infection, too late, what can you do as a land manager, if anything? And is it crazy to try and do anything? So, of course, from day one, our strategy is to protect human health. We've had to manage hazard trees, dangerous trees, and in itself, this is a huge effort and dangerous. But then, more recently, since 2008, we've been supporting a applied research program. And this is in collaboration with Susan Frankel from U.S. Forest Service, Mateo Garbalato's lab at UC Berkeley, Phytosphere Research, and others, but those are sort of the main players. And I've divided it into two categories. It's applied research, which is manipulations of the landscape to see if we can slow down the pathogen in strategic locations, and basic research, by which I do not mean not useful research, but just but understanding the basic, a lot of people think that, but it's research to understand the basic biology of the pathogen, the host plants, and things. And there's quite a bit of very applicable knowledge, I think, that will come out of this effort. So we're excited to support that as well. So lots of interesting results are coming out. I think Mateo Garbalato mentioned a few of those things yesterday, and I can't even begin to get into them, and maybe it's not really my place anyway. But one of the interesting patterns that came out right away was that along the San Andreas fault line, shown in red, these red dots here, there's very high levels of sudden death mortality associated with Phytophthora ramorum. And this isn't too surprising. This is a major effort. Melina Cosimita has spent, she's tagged 1,000 bays, 1,000 coastline boats, 16 study plots. She's gone back at least 5 times in the last year and a half to these sites and sampled and inspected all these trees. It's pretty impressive. So a lot of opportunities for data mining here. So if you look at this, although it's all dark green, the coastline book bay, it's actually pretty heterogeneous. So along the fault line, which is where our reservoirs are, it's also, it's a damp, it's the bottom of a hill. It's a low spot. And we have very, very large bay trees. They're thriving there. In fact, we have the Jepson laurel, which is the second largest in the state or something like that. So we have these huge, majestic bay trees. So that even the concept of removing bays to protect the coastline boats is sort of ridiculous in this area. But on the hillside, we have a lot less disease, and we have smaller, slower growing oaks, a lot less bay. So there's some opportunities up in here, potentially. What also came out was there's this patch down in the southern end that has this so far disease-free, and that includes our tan oak. So far, our tan oak forest is healthy, and so that suggests, obviously, that we should try and focus some of our management efforts in these areas where there's some hope. of having effect. So we've treated some coastline oaks with Agrifos. We've treated some tan oaks with coastline oaks with Agrifos, and we've treated a certain amount of coastline oaks with a bay removal. And this was an area where there was a very small number of bay understory, as opposed to these big majestic oaks, bay that I was talking about earlier. So, one of the things that you have to grapple with right away is the scale. And this is something that really is very overwhelming and something that we need to think about as a funding agency or a management agency. So, for example, 1,500 acres. There's 1,500 acres of redwood tamarisk forest. And 3 of those acres we were able to treat. We, meaning Tetsuriki, and with some help from Maine Tree Company and Matea Bergalata's lab. So that was 260 large tan oak stems that were treated. A pretty major endeavor over 3 acres. So even just this portion, a very small fraction, was a pretty big effort. Similarly, you know, we were able to treat 5 acres out of 5,800. So it sort of begs the question as, why are we doing this? And I think it's a complicated question that Cindy Russler and I were talking about. And I think that's part of why there's not that many land managers here. So maybe we should just throw up our hands. And of course, everybody likes to feel like they're trying to do something, but you don't want to feel like you're wasting your time. So I think there's a couple reasons why I think it's important. One is potentially if we can, and this is just sort of a general philosophy about dealing with invasive species, if you have an infestation but you can identify some high priority areas to protect, rather than trying to protect the whole landscape, maybe you can choose high priority areas and carve them out and try and protect them. But I think probably more importantly, and this is maybe extremely optimistic, I'm hoping that if we carve out these areas, we have these little pockets that we're putting on life support, maybe technology will catch up. There'll be a biocontrol something that will come along and allow us to use these pockets of original forests to propagate out from in the future. So maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I'm hoping. And the tree removals, we've only just been tracking this as a coastline oak separate thing since 2008. But it's very, you know, it's something everybody talks about. It's a pretty major endeavor for us to do that. 750. So far, I think the results are pretty inconclusive because we just got started with this program. The controls are still doing well. The treated trees are all doing well. There's a preliminary result maybe in our coastline oaks. There's starting to be some mortality in the controls. But I think since this was such a wet spring, we'd be more likely to get some more results soon. So thanks to all the many, many, many people who have been worked very hard on this, and everybody on this list have made major contributions, and then there's lots more people who have also participated. So thanks to everybody.